From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater, an hour of sounds from the golden age of radio, coming to you from New York's Finger Lakes region. I'm Jake Longwell. We'll open today's program with one of my favorite police dramas of the golden age of radio, Dragnet. The brainchild of Jack Webb, the series debuted on NBC in 1949, made a successful transition to television, also on NBC in 1951. The radio series ran through 1957, although they ceased producing new radio episodes in 1955, but they reran classic episodes until 1957. The initial television run of Dragnet ran from 1951 through 1959. This broadcast is from near the end of the production of the radio series. This was originally broadcast November 30th on NBC. We have an Armed Forces Radio rebroadcast, program 276 in the series, Jack Webb starring as Joe Friday, Ben Alexander as Frank Smith. The episode, The Big Gone.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned a robbery detail. You get a call that a flower shop has been held up. Two men have been shot. One of them killed. Your job? Check it out.
It was Tuesday, June 8th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of robbery detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Friday. We're on our way out from the office, and it was 10:15 a.m. when we got to the corner of 7th Street and Bunker Hill Avenue. The Stoneham Flower Shop.
Back there.
Oh. Wasn't any way for me to know what it was all about until it was too late.
Yes, sir.
Just stood there. Didn't move around. Just stood. Oh, you fellas want to see me?
Police officers. This is Frank Smith. My name is Friday.
Central?
That's right.
Roberts, one of 16.
You answer the call?
Yeah.
I'm the fellow that shot the crook, you know.
Yes, sir. Did you get a description?
Yeah, it's out. Metro sending a couple of cars to help us look for the suspect.
Very good.
Anything else I can do for you?
No, not right now.
Okay, I'll get on outside then.
Right, thank you. You'll take care of the report then, will you?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll check with you.
Good. Nice fella.
Yes, sir.
Could have used him back to home.
Sir?
Good man like that. Could have used him.
What do you mean?
Ran a detective agency back home. Had a couple of men sleuthing around. He made a good one.
Mm-hmm. Would you tell us what happened here?
Ain't nobody done that yet?
No, sir. We just got a hotshot call. There'd been a robbery and shooting. We came right out from the office.
Hmm. You heard about it?
No, sir.
Well, don't you worry. I'll fill you both in and give you the whole story.
All right, sir, if you would.
Abner Stosset.
What's that, sir?
Full name's Abner Davis Stosset. After Jeff.
Who?
Jefferson Davis, the president.
Oh.
Don't usually use the middle name. People out here don't seem to understand three, just the front and back. Abner Stosset.
Yes, sir. All right. Now, if you tell us what happened.
They shot Danville.
That's the victim.
Yep. Shot him right here, just above spleen. Here.
Mm-hmm. How'd it happen?
It looked like 38 automatic.
Well, yes, sir. But what led up to the shooting?
Two fellas. They tried to rob her.
Mm-hmm.
Tried it with the wrong two men, tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
Out loud.
Sir?
Tell you that out loud.
Oh, I see. Do you want to go on?
Well, same thing every morning.
Yes, sir.
We make up the deposit slip, take the money to the bank. You're the one who does it right and don't have to do the walking. This time, Danville Road, I was going to make a trip.
Yes, sir.
I was about to leave. These two young guys come in the place. First off, I figured they want to buy some flowers. You know, something like that.
Yes, sir.
Danville was going to take care of them. Excuse me a minute, will you?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Stone and Flores. Yes, sir. Oh, no, we can take care of it for you. That's right. Where do you want them sent? Now, just let me check the book here a minute. Walnut Creek. Yeah, we can do it for you. No, sir, we'll send them by wire. Well, they'll be delivered in about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You want the long stems? Yeah, well, they're $7.50 a dozen. That's right. Yes, sir, you want to give me the charge information on that card? Yes, sir. How do you spell that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir, the number? No, sir, the one on the lower right. Yeah, it's 726. All right, is there a message?
Mm-hmm.
No, not at all, sir. I think it's real pretty. Yeah. No, they'll put the card in. We just wire the order. They'll be very nice. Yes, sir. Frank, you call us again. That's right. Bye.
Got to send some roses up to Walnut Creek. Birthday for a girl named Irma.
Mm-hmm. What if we get back to what happened here?
Oh, yeah. Well, these two fellas came in. They just stood there with their feet kind of spread out like they just got off a boat, you know. Stood there, just looked around.
Was there anybody else in the store?
Just Dan Bell and me.
I see. What did the men say to you?
Only one of them talked, the dark one. He asked me if there's anybody in the back, workroom back
mm-hmm.
here. I told him there wasn't, and that's when he showed me the pistol. Stood there in high cotton, waving it around, told me to hand over the bag of money.
Were you carrying it at the time?
I told you that before. I was on my way to the
yes,
bank.
Sir.
Danville wrote the slip I was going to the bank.
I understand.
Now, what did he say when he showed you the gun?
Said it was a stick-up.
Do you remember his exact words?
It happened kind of fast for me. Let me see. I think it was, don't try anything, it's a stick-up, like that, he said it.
I see. Now, how'd the shooting start?
Well, Danville said he wasn't going to have no kid talk to him like that. He reached out, took a swing at the kid, a real roundhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Dark kid ducked back, pulled the trigger, shot Danville right here. Spleen. Dropped like a rock.
Mm-hmm.
I pulled out my gun, started shooting.
You always carry a gun?
When I'm going to the bank, you never know what's going to happen.
You have a permit?
It's against the law to carry a gun without permission, ain't it?
Yes.
Well, then I got it.
After you pulled your gun, what happened?
A shot.
Yeah, I can understand that.
Shot right at the dark fellow.
Mm-hmm.
You hit him, huh?
I don't often miss.
I see.
Hit him three times. Here in the chest.
Mm-hmm. What was the other man doing while this was happening?
He pulled out a gun, too, and the balloon went up. Bullets flying all over the place.
Yeah.
Then both of them took off, run out of the place. I followed them.
Mm-hmm.
Got to the door. The dark one turned around. Gonna shoot at me again.
Uh-huh.
Didn't move fast enough. I pulled the trigger, hit him right in the middle of the chest. Went down like a dropped duck egg.
What about the other one?
He started running down the street. I guess about the only thing he was wanting was to get away.
Yeah.
Took two shots at him while he was running. I blazed away. Only had two more bullets in the gun. I gave them both to him.
You hit him?
Yeah, at least once, because I saw him jerk. It might have been both times. He kept running, though.
What'd you do then?
I'd come back in here, see what I could do for Danville. Made him as comfortable as I could, and then I called the police.
All right.
He came sliding up and took out after the fellow that got away. The ambulance came and picked up Danville and the other guy.
Yes, sir. Now, I wonder if you could give us the description of the man who got away.
Yeah. Yes.
I'll call Georgia Street and check on the other suspect.
That ain't going to do no good.
What?
You don't have to inquire about him. He's dead.
You're sure about that?
Son, I know when somebody's dead.
Yes, sir.
I hit that fellow four times in the chest with a .44. I saw him drop. About as much life as a sack of cornmeal. He was dead.
I'll check anyway.
All right.
Yeah, sure sorry.
What are you sorry about?
I say it's a real sorry that you can't work with that other young fellow that was in here. You know the one in uniform. He was a bright boy.
Mm-hmm.
This fellow here, he couldn't even fill out an application for our agency.
Would you give us the description?
First line.
I beg your pardon?
I say he wouldn't even be able to fill out the first line. Didn't know who Jeff Davis was. Hard to believe.
Yeah, and how about that description?
Well, fellow was about your height, weighed in maybe 150, around there.
Mm-hmm.
He had light hair, lighter at the top and down by his head, like he was bleached in the sun.
Any marks or scars?
No, nothing that'd stand out. He had a kind of a flat face.
What about his clothes?
White shirt, kind of tan pants, carrying a leather jacket with the fur around the collar.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Both of them had those.
Was there anything in the way they talked? An accent, maybe?
No, just North talk. I can't tell the difference much of the time.
Mm-hmm. Would you know the man if you saw him again?
You bet I would. Just stand him up in front of me, and I'll lay it on, point him right out.
Mm-hmm. What'd you find out?
I talked to the hospital, Joe.
Yeah?
Are you sure you hit one of the suspects, mister?
Positive.
And he was on the sidewalk?
Saw him hit and die.
What's the matter?
Well, the ambulance only brought in one person.
Yeah.
The dead man's gone.
Put in a call to the hospital and made arrangements to talk to the ambulance crew. They told us that they'd only picked up one person at the scene. They went on to say that there wasn't another injured party on the premises anywhere. A check with the officer who answered the original call brought out the information that there hadn't been anybody on the sidewalk when the radio car had gotten there. Frank put out a local broadcast to all cars in the area, and I went back to talk to Abner Stosett.
I told you before, that boy ain't too bright.
Now, you're sure you shot that man?
Look, I'll go along with you and say maybe I did miss the first three times. That ain't likely, but just for the sake, I'll admit it.
All right, sir.
But I know I hit him outside. I was closer to him than I am to you. Ain't nobody could miss that close.
All right.
Come on outside. Take a look at the sidewalk. You tell me if it's my imagination.
All right, fine.
I got it out, Joe. All the cars in the area are looking for it.
All right, fine.
One thing I'm always proud of is the way I can shoot. I don't hardly ever miss. I know I didn't this time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, just look at that. Take a look. You tell me that's blood, ain't it?
Yes, sir, it looks like it.
It is. I was standing right here. Right here. He was there. He turned around, tried to shoot me. I fired at him. He went down right there. You can see where the big stain is. Right there.
Uh-huh. Well, how'd they get there?
What do you mean?
Well, did you see a car?
Yeah, I told the other cops about it. That's it right there. I drove up in it and got out.
Did you see him get out of the car?
Yeah, I was just leaving the store, and I saw him right after they come in the store.
All right, you want to check the car?
Yeah.
Now, don't go touching it. The cops said not to.
Mm-hmm. Was there anybody else who saw the man on the sidewalk?
You mean besides me?
That's right.
Not that I know of. As soon as I emptied my gun at the blonde fella, I went back in the store. I stayed there till the police car pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
Not more than 3, maybe 4 minutes.
Yes, sir.
Not more, but I'm telling you, he was right here. Lying there, and he was dead.
Mm-hmm.
Crime lab's on the way out to check the car.
Mm-hmm. Well, looks like the suspect might have gotten up and walked away, doesn't it?
If he did, then it's really one for the books.
Trail of bloodstains here.
Yeah.
Never nothing like this happened back home. Back there, when you shoot somebody, he's got the courtesy to stay shot.
Trail stops.
Mm-hmm. Let's check over there and see if we can pick it up.
Yeah. How about it?
Nothing. It just stops, that's all.
Maybe somebody picked him up in the car.
Yeah, must be. Was there anybody else parked in front of the store at the time?
Not that I remember. You can see yourself. We got the sign where it says just for the customers.
You're absolutely sure there was nobody else?
If I wasn't, I'd have told this fella.
Yes.
You didn't see the man get up off the sidewalk?
No, there wasn't no reason for me to look at him. Far as I was concerned, he was dead. Still ain't sure he wasn't.
Well, the trail of bloodstains showed that he did leave here.
It still don't sell me.
I better start checking the neighborhood.
Right.
You want me to help you?
No, sir, that won't be necessary.
Mr. Friday.
Yes, sir.
Could I talk to you for a minute?
All right.
Alone?
Excuse me, Frank.
Yeah.
Mr. Friday, I saw that man fall. I saw him hit the sidewalk. I know he was hurt bad. He wasn't going to get up. I'm sure of it.
Yes, sir, we understand.
I told him all that. I just don't see how I could have made a mistake like that. That fella couldn't have gotten up. He's dead.
Yes, sir, we believe you, but he's not here.
That don't change a thing, my boy.
How's that?
He's dead someplace else, that's all.
An immediate search was started of all buildings in the area. If the suspect had walked away from the scene, the amount of blood on the sidewalk indicated he couldn't have gotten far without help. While Frank and I talked to the shopkeepers in the vicinity, a check was made of the car that the thieves had used. It was found to be stolen, and arrangements were made to talk to the owner. Members of the crime lab crew came out and checked the vehicle. They were unable to turn up anything we could use in identifying the holdup men. 11:28 a.m., Frank and I talked to the owner of a small tobacco shop.
Saw the whole thing.
Well, where were you during the shooting, Mr. Collard?
Right out in front. I looked down the street, and there it was, just like it was a cinemascope.
Now, sir, did you see the actual shooting?
Well, not the first. No, I was in here, behind the counter, fixing up a new bunch of pipes we just got in, putting them up on the board. All of a sudden, I heard this noise. First off, I thought it might be a backfire. Then I knew.
Yes, sir?
It wasn't. It was shots. So I went outside to see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing I see, these three guys come out on the sidewalk, right in front of the flower shop, three of them.
Mm-hmm.
Abner and a couple more. One of them black-haired, the other was kind of blonde.
Yeah.
One of them tried to get Abner. Other one took off in this direction. I see Abner raise that gun of his and point at me, and I ducked inside.
Did one of the men go by here?
Yes, Abner shot at him a couple of times. Must have hit him, because I could see he was hurt when he run past.
Did you see where he went?
No. I told you, when those shots started to go by, I didn't want to wait around to see if one of them was monogrammed for me. I left.
All right. Can you tell us what direction the man took?
Not after he went by the door. Must have gone around the corner.
Well, why'd he say that?
Well, because when I went back out, I couldn't see him. If he'd gone up the street, I'd have been able to.
Now, did you see the man out in front of the store?
You mean Abner?
No, sir, the one he was shooting at. The
yeah, I got a pretty good look at him.
Where was he?
He was just lying there. He wasn't moving around much.
Did you see him get up?
No. What's all this about the other guy for?
Well, what do you mean?
The one Abner killed. Why all the questions about him?
Well, sir, he's gone.
You mean he got away?
Yes, sir, it looks that way.
Well, I don't see how that could be. I went right by him, a couple of feet away. There wasn't no life in him then, nothing. He left there, and somebody had to carry him.
Yes, sir, that's the way it looks.
No reason for anybody to do it. The man was dead. There's no reason at all.
Well, there must have been one.
Why?
He's not there. checked out the rest of the neighborhood, but we failed to turn up any information. None of the shopkeepers in the vicinity had seen where the blonde holdup man had gone. All of them who had seen the man on the sidewalk were willing to testify that he was dead. Yet the physical evidence at the scene indicated that he'd gotten up under his own power and walked away carrying four bullets in his chest. 2:40 p.m. Frank and I returned to our car and began to cruise the streets in the area. 3:15 p.m.
Well, it doesn't look like we're going to find him.
Well, Frankie's got to be here someplace.
Unless somebody picked him up.
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah.
Fellow on the bench over there, you see him?
Oh, yeah. Waiting for the bus.
He was there when we went by before. Take it easy when you pass him this time.
All right.
Better pull over.
Yeah.
Matches the description.
Uh-huh.
Looks like bloodstains on his shirt from here.
It sure does. Fits in good.
All right. You cover him from that side. I'll go this way.
Right.
Joe, he's got a gun.
Joe, you all right?
Yeah, thanks to this mailbox.
I saw him pull a gun. Thought sure he got you.
Well, he didn't miss by much. Well, we better check him.
Yeah. I hit him twice, Joe.
Take it easy. He's dead.
There wasn't anything I could do. It was you or him.
Puts us in a corner.
Yeah.
He was our lead to the other suspect.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
Came out and removed the body. The victim was identified as Jeffrey Burnham, age 27. From his package, we found that he'd been arrested several times on charges of armed robbery and that he'd served one term in San Quentin. Abner Stoss had identified him positively as one of the holdup men. Frank and I went back to the office to do a complete check on his friends and known acquaintances in the hope that we could turn up something to lead us to the other man. The search for the dark suspect was continued during the night without result. The next morning, we met with Lieutenant Stoner, and we made arrangements for additional men to aid us in checking out the list that we'd made on Burnham's friends. 8:47 a.m.
You ready?
Yeah, let's go. I get it. Robbery Friday. Yes, sir. Run away. Yes, sir. Bye. The victim, Abner Stossett.
Yeah?
Says he came across something this morning.
What was it?
Should tell us who the missing man is. We left the office and drove out to the florist shop. Abner Stossett met us at the door.
I don't know why I didn't think of it yesterday.
What's that, sir?
You remember how I told you they was both carrying leather jackets?
Yeah.
Well, after I shot the one fellow on the sidewalk, I came back in here to take care of Danville.
Yes, sir.
I looked around to find something to put under his head. Yeah, wait, here, man, I'll get it.
All right.
I guess I didn't think much about it, you know, kind of all upset.
Uh-huh.
But cleaning up this morning, I found it. It should give you something to work on.
Well?
There it is. We still see the stains on where the fella dropped it.
Yeah.
Are you sure this jacket belonged to the missing suspect?
Yeah, you remember how I saw him drop it when he got shot? I remember it good.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. We'll check it out.
You shouldn't be too much trouble.
How's that?
Here, take a look. I found this myself here.
Huh.
Laundry tag.
Took the jacket over to the crime lab. Lieutenant Lee Jones started to check through his records for the name of the cleaner that had serviced the garment. Frank and I went back to the office and talked with Officers O'Donnell and Gerber. They told us that the list of the suspect's friends had been checked without result. The search for the missing man had been called off, and the additional units had returned to Metro Division. At 4:30 p.m., we got the call from Lee Jones. He gave us the name and address of the cleaner. Frank and I left the office and drove over to his shop.
Yes, sir. Something I can do for you?
Police officers. This is Frank Smith. My name's Spidey.
Oh.
How do you do, sir?
Hope there isn't anything wrong.
No, sir. We just like some information.
I got it. It's yours.
All right, sir. Ever see this before?
Leather jacket. A lot of them around.
How about this tag here? One of yours, isn't it?
Let's see. Yeah, it's our mark.
Can you tell us who brought this jacket in to be cleaned?
It'd be hard to say.
Well, the way we got it belongs to a fellow about 25, dark hair, about 150 pounds.
We do a good-sized business. Hard to remember all the people who come in.
That's right, sir, but do you have that many leather jackets?
No. Wait a minute. Let me think a minute. Might be outside, but it could be.
What's that?
Halleck. Norman Halleck. He looks like how you said. I've done some work for him and his family. It might be him.
Can you tell us where we can find him?
Well, I got his address in the book. I can look it up for him.
If you would, please.
Might be. I hear he's been in trouble with the cops for
for?
Did you know what for?
No, just neighborhood gossip. Only thing I'd want to put my name on.
Uh-huh.
Here it is. Norman Halleck, H-A-L-I-K, 10267 Sacramento Street.
Archer, thank you very much.
Why don't you tell me what he's done?
I think it'd be better if we talk to him about that.
Sure, it's his business anyway.
Yeah.
That's the trouble with people nowadays. They're all the time pushing in on somebody else.
Uh-huh.
Telling things they aren't sure about. Giving people bad names for nothing.
Well, there's one small difference here.
Huh?
This fellow made his own name. We got Halleck's address. We drove back to the office. We checked the name through R&I and found that he had several arrests for robbery and one for assault with a deadly weapon. We pulled his mugshot and drove out to see the victim, Abner Stosic.
No, that ain't him. No. No. Wait a minute. Here he is.
You sure, are you?
Yeah, I think so. Let me see that again.
Go ahead.
Eyes are the same. Hair's a little shorter. No, it doesn't make any difference.
Sure.
That's the man.
Frank and I drove over to the address on Sacramento Street. We checked with the landlady, and she told us that Norman Halleck was in his room. We went upstairs. Halleck, right there.
What do you want?
Turn around.
What?
Turn around. Put your hands up on that wall.
Come on, move.
Stand still.
All right, he's clean, Joe.
All right, let's go.
Well, what's this all about?
Come on, let's go.
Well, you got to make a charge.
All right, suspicion of robbery.
You're out of your head.
You tell us about it, will you?
Sure, it's a bad beat.
It always is, isn't it?
It doesn't make any difference. You take me down, book me. I'll be out right away. All I need is a little time.
Yeah, well, then you're in real trouble.
Huh?
You just ran out of it. We searched the suspect's room, but we failed to find anything to further tie him in with a robbery shooting. He was taken to the city hall, where Frank and I talked to him in the interrogation room.
How about it? Does that jacket belong to you?
I don't know.
The cleaner says it does.
Well, a lot of leather jackets. How's he know this one's mine?
All right, Halleck. Now, come on. We got you made, and you know it.
I told you before, this is a bad beat.
You're going to save yourself a lot of time if you cop out.
I'm glad to help, but I can't give you anything.
Where were you yesterday?
Home.
Anybody to back that up?
Yeah.
Well, then you can come up with the names.
Sure, all you need.
You know a Jeffrey Burnham?
Burnham?
B-U-R-N-H-A-M.
I know a lot of people. I might know.
All right, now, this is a simple question. Just give us an answer, will you?
You put it like that, I gotta say no.
Stand up.
Huh?
Nothing wrong with your ears. Stand up.
All right, now what?
Take off your coat.
What?
Your coat. Take it off.
You guys have gone straight up. All right, now what?
Take your shirt off.
Huh?
Come on. It's simple. Take the shirt off, will you, fella?
I put the third degree out. You're going to freeze me to death?
Come on, move.
All right, now what?
Turn around.
When do you turn on the blue light?
Frank.
Yeah.
All right, you can put your clothes on and sit down, Halleck. Come on.
Yeah.
You stay there, Halleck.
Well, what do you think?
He looked awful good for a while, didn't he? Sure blows it up.
Yeah. Supposed to be shot four times in the chest.
Not a bullet wound on him anywhere. A special show-up was arranged, and the suspect was shown to the victim. On seeing Halleck in person, he was unable to give us a positive identification. The suspect was detained at the main jail while we checked out his alibi for the day of the robbery. It held. Several people swore that he was 2 miles from the scene when the shooting took place. We questioned him about the leather jacket. He was unable to come up with an explanation as to how it could have gotten to the scene. We checked out all of the people in the building where he lived, all of his friends and associates, and on June 11th, he was released from custody. 10:16 a.m., Frank and I got back to the office from the main jail.
Well, I guess better check with the skipper, huh?
Yeah.
You got a good excuse?
Yeah, we'll just tell him the way it happened. He has to go along with it, the truth.
Well, Joe, it isn't logical that a man could walk around with four bullets in his chest and we can't find him.
Well, then you tell me what we're looking for.
Well, do you think Halleck gave us all he had?
I don't know. At least we know he's clean.
Yeah. No. Where do we go from here?
We'll go tell the skipper.
All right.
Just put it in the books and keep working on it. We got one thing with us.
Huh?
That guy's around someplace. Sooner or later, somebody's going to have too much to drink, maybe get in a fight with a girlfriend, trust somebody too much, but they're going to say something. When they do, we'll hear about it. And we'll get to him.
Yeah.
Just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
One thing, we got more than he has.
The story you have just heard is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On June 11th, a meeting was held in the captain's office, Robbery Division, Los Angeles Police Department. The case was completely reviewed and a report written on the results of the investigation. As of this date, that investigation is continuing.
Dragnet. The story of your police force in action is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
The Big Gone, an episode of Dragnet, from November 30th of 1954, originally airing on NBC. We heard an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast of that episode. In various old-time radio communities, most of the Dragnet programs from about 1954 forward are only available as AFRS rebroadcasts. I don't think any of the NBC masters from that time period still survive. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, you can do so by email. Our address is qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our blog and website, where you'll find much more info about the show, including detailed playlists and streaming audio of this and previous radio theater broadcasts. qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com is the address you'll need. This is program number 1533, by the way. For our final offering this hour, we have some music and a bit of comedy, as we have an episode of Maxwell House Coffee Time. Maxwell House, or General Foods, sponsored many different radio programs throughout radio's golden era from the 1920s into the 1950s. In 1946, Meredith Wilson hosted a summer replacement series under the name Maxwell House Coffee Time for the Burns and Allen Show, which took a well-deserved summer vacation. Meredith Wilson, of course, was connected with Burns and Allen at that time. This broadcast is from June 13th of 1946 on NBC. It's the Meredith Wilson version of Maxwell House Coffee Time.
North, east, south, and west. A real part of the American scene is Maxwell House Coffee, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. A certain young man once made the following remark about a part of the American scene. Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it like we say it back home. Well, that young man has more comments on the American scene. He's your host for the evening. He's Meredith Wilson.
Why, good evening, all. You know, I had no idea when I wrote that song, Iowa, that it would ever make a college professor declare war on me, but it did. Most of you know that this is Iowa's centennial year, which means that Iowa has been one of these United States for 100 years now. And everybody's celebrating back home because they're pretty sure it'll be permanent. And everything was just fine until Dr. Lewis Worthington Smith, Dean Emeritus of the Drake University English Department, got a load of my song. Now, when an English professor spots a grammatical error in a sentence, he acts just like a farmer who spots a weevil in his cotton. Dr. Smith spotted one in the lyrics of my song. An error, not a weevil. And he blew his top. Or, in the case of an English professor, I suppose you'd say he burst his cranium. The doctor pointed out that I said, like we say it back home, where I should have said, as we say it back home. Now I agree, of course, that as is grammatically correct. After all, I did go to Mason City High School, and although English wasn't my best subject, I eventually graduated. But I honestly used the word like on purpose because it sounds more natural. And if a song doesn't sound natural, it's hard to sing. Even a little novelty song like Who's Your Little Hooses? Who do you love? That's not grammatical either, but who cares? You mean to say that Dr. Smith might get together of an informal Saturday night with the head of the law school and maybe the dean of the conservatory and wind up singing Who's Your Little Hooses? Whom do you love? No, no. But seriously, I know that the eminent Dr. Smith is just as good a sport as they come. Unless you have a sense of humor, you can't spend your life teaching the English language to young men who leave your classroom, meet a co-ed, and say, "Hiya, babe, let's crawl." So I'm going to show him that I'm a good sport, too. I fixed up an impartial arrangement of Iowa for the King sisters to do. Half the time, pure Dr. Smith, and the other half, not so pure Wilson. Fair enough, Doctor?
Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it like we say it back home. It's the robin in the willows. It's the postmaster's friendly hello. Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it as we say it back home. It's the sumac in September. It's the squeak of your shoes in the snow. It's the Sunday school and the old river bend. Songs on the porch after dark. It's the corner store and a penny to spend on you and your girl in the park. Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it like we say it back home. It's a promise for tomorrow and a memory of long, long ago. Iowa, it's a beautiful name when you say it as we say it, when you say it like we say it, when you say it as we say it back home.
Well, I wanted to show that I had no hard feelings toward Dr. Smith, and I also wanted something right in here that would be typical of the American scene, so I picked colleges. America has more colleges than any other country, which accounts for our large number of college graduates. And while they're inside those ivy-clad walls, looking forward to the day when they'll get an M.A. degree or a Ph.D. or just a simple check from home, they like to sing. In fact, you can hear entire student bodies putting their heart, soul, and lungs into songs which state emphatically that the old green and gold is marching down the field and tearing them apart, even when the old green and gold is being slaughtered 52-0 by the old brown and beige. Now, Ben Gage will sing the two songs in this melody spot, Sweetheart of Sigma Chi, a favorite of the campus and barbershop, and Pi Phi Sweetheart. That's a new sorority song which I wrote because I'm convinced that a girl who belongs to a sorority can have a sweetheart just as well as a fellow who belongs to a fraternity. And, of course, thousands of girls who never joined a sorority or even went to college are now married and have large families.
Thank you.
if her colors are wine and blue, if her eyes seem to shine like the arrow she wears, waiting for someone like you, then your dreams can start with the magic that dreams impart. And at last you are certain and sure that she's your Pi Beta Phi girl, your Pi Phi sweetheart. The girl of my dreams is the sweetest girl of all the girls I know. Each fair coed like a rainbow trail fades in the afterglow. The gold of her hair and the blue of her eyes are a blend of the western sky, and her fair face beams. She's the girl of my dreams. She's the sweetheart of Sigma Chi.
The city of Chicago got its name because wild onions grew there at one time. And Chicago was the Indian name for onion place. It was also the Indian word for skunk place. But that's no reason for the citizens of Chicago to feel self-conscious, just because some nearsighted Indian couldn't tell a skunk from an onion. I learned that interesting fact from a book called Names on the Land by George Stewart, which tells how our states and rivers and towns got their names. Texas got its name from the Indian word techis, which means friends. And the people down there really live up to it. During the war, I met lots of friendly Texans in uniform who pointed out how lucky we Americans were to have Texas on our side. Hollywood got its name when the founders saw a bush with red berries on it and thought it was holly, but it was really a plant called Toyon. However, I don't think there's any danger that the name of this little town will be changed to Toyon Wood, or even, as some of his relatives may have suggested, to Zanuck Wood. That's just a sample of the hundreds of facts about American names that Mr. Stewart mentions. And after you've read them all, you get the feeling that you're closer to those Americans way back yonder who thought up the names, and somehow closer even to America itself. It's a book you're bound to like. In fact, I'll be very pleased if you like our medley from Carousel half as much.
Thank you. Say, I like that calliope effect, Meredith.
You do, Ben? Well, I like it, too. Matter of fact, I guess that's why I put it in there.
Say, how long since you've ridden on a carousel?
You mean a merry-go-round? Oh, quite a few years, Ben.
Well, you'll still find the small fry and the magical merry-go-round when the carnival hits town today. And now, as always, there's the bearded lady and the strong man sharing the spotlight with games of chance, while the barker invites one and all to see the world from the top of the Ferris wheel. Yes, all over America, the traveling carnivals continue to be colorful, exciting parts of the American scene. You know, it makes me think, too, how over the years, Maxwell House Coffee has also become a very real part of the American scene. In this land where coffee itself is a national drink, more people buy and enjoy Maxwell House Coffee than any other brand. Yes, today it's Maxwell House wherever you go. And no wonder, for Maxwell House is a skillful blend of premium Latin American coffees, each contributing its own individual flavor. There are Manizales for mellowness, Medellins for richness, other choice Latin American coffees for vigor, and Bucaramangas for full body. Good reason why North, East, South, and West, America's favorite coffee is Maxwell House. Why not discover for yourself the rare goodness and flavor of this coffee that's always good to the last drop?
Did you know that in parts of East Africa you can find bananas 2 feet long and as big around as a man's arm? Isn't that interesting? I've always been fond of bananas, and that's why I get upset when I see a candlestick salad. That's one of those things where you peel an unfortunate, defenseless banana, stick it upright in the middle of a pineapple ring, and dribble mayonnaise down its side to resemble candle grease. Then you slap a cherry on top of it for a flame. People actually do that, you know. I say it's all right to eat a banana, but why make it look ridiculous? Other songwriters are fond of bananas, too, I guess, because they've written quite a few songs about them. There was Yes, We Have No Bananas, which became so horribly popular that it set the fruit back 50 years. Then there was I've Never Seen a Straight Banana, which must have involved a tremendous amount of research. And there was I Like Bananas Because They Have No Bones, which is very sound reasoning, I guess. Now, the most recent is called Chiquita Banana and has something to do with not putting bananas in the icebox because they turn brown. This song has apparently reached the pain-in-the-neck stage in the East, judging from the gags about it on all the Eastern radio programs, though strangely enough, we've hardly heard it at all out here. So the King Sisters, who just made a recording of this song, are going to do it for you Westerners right now. And if you folks back East have anything else you'd rather do, you go right ahead. We'll call you in exactly 2 minutes and 40 seconds. 1, 2, 3.
I'm Chiquita Banana, and I've come to say I come from Little Island down Equator Way. I sail on Big Banana Boat from Caribbean to see if I can help good neighbor policy. I bring a song about bananas. I sing it low, I sing it high, I make a hit with Americanos. Sing a song about bananas. I could sing about the moonlight on the very, very tropical equator. But no, I sing about bananas and the refrigerator. I'm Chiquita Banana, and I've come to say bananas have to ripen in a certain way. When they are flecked with brown and have a golden hue, bananas taste the best and are the best for you. You can put them in a salad, put them in a pie, any way you want to eat them. It's impossible to beat them. But bananas like the climate of the very, very tropical equator. So you should never put bananas in the refrigerator. Bananas have skin that people love to touch, but they get freckles if you touch too much. So keep them comfy and don't ever chill. You'll find that they keep until you start to peel. Poor little banana come so far away. From South America she's come to stay. Between you and me I've a great big hunch. Poor little banana's gonna miss the bunch. Love to sing about bananas. They're the apple of my eye. Going crazy about bananas. Cross my heart and hope to die. I could sing about the very, very tropical equator. But as for your refrigerator, poor little banana, she hates her.
Oh, Easterners, come on back. We're all through with the bananas. I was only kidding, anyhow. I knew you wouldn't walk out on the King Sisters. Last week, we played a Chopin waltz, by the way, and I may possibly have offended someone by saying, in effect, that anybody who doesn't like Chopin should consult a psychiatrist. Well, we're going to play another Chopin waltz, and what I said still goes.
Say, Meredith, I was wondering, did you hear anything from George and Gracie about our show last Thursday?
Yes, I did, Ben. They enjoyed it very much. But Gracie got the strange impression that I talked quite a bit. Were you conscious of that, Ben?
Well,
It seemed to me that I showed remarkable restraint. Don't you think so?
Well, yes, I
realize that some people become fascinated by the sound of their own voice, but that could never be said about me, could it?
Well, no, I
Come to think of it, you don't talk very much either, Ben.
No, I don't, except when times when I have something really important to say.
Well, I...
And this is one of those times. Anything that has nationwide appeal is certainly important enough to talk about, and today, north, east, south, and west, you'll discover it's Maxwell House wherever you go.
Well...
Yes, Maxwell House is a very real part of the American scene. The fact is, more people buy and enjoy Maxwell House coffee than any other brand. You see, Maxwell House is a combination of many choice coffees, each carefully selected, then blended by men who've made blending an art. And to bring out the full strength and flavor of every bean in the blend, there's Radiant Roasting, a scientific process that brings you great coffee at its delicious, satisfying best. And now that the warm weather is here, remember that Maxwell House iced coffee always makes a marvelously refreshing summertime drink. Icing coffee is a real test of flavor, and the Maxwell House flavor really stands up. So, friends, do yourself a favor. Next time, simply say Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop.
Well, it's time for the familiar finale, and I won't bother you with titles because you know the song just as well as I do. By the way, any of you folks notice the different ways they announce song titles on radio programs? There's the cute approach where the announcer says, "What are you going to play now, Joe?" And the band leader says, "I'm going to play After You've Gone." And the announcer says, "Gee, I wish you'd play now so I can hear it." And then the band leader says, "No, you don't understand. The name of the song is After You've Gone." And then the announcer says, "Oh!" And the band leader plays After You've Gone. Well, they didn't fool anybody, and they wasted 10 seconds besides. Then there's the dignified, semi-poetic approach where the announcer says in hushed tones, "As the last rays of the dying sun fade away and the moon mounts into the sky, there comes that magic twilight hour which marks the meeting of night and day." Now, that method doesn't fool anybody either, but it has the advantage of only wasting 5 seconds. Frankly, wouldn't you rather I'd skip the whole thing?
All through the day, I dream about the night. I dream about the night here with you. All through the day, I wish away the time until the time when I'm here with you. Down falls the sun, I run to meet you. The evening mist melts away. Down smiles the moon, and soon your lips recall the kiss I dreamed of all through the day.
Thought the love was over, that we were really through. I said I didn't love him, that we'd begin anew. And you can all believe me, we sure intended to, but we just couldn't say goodbye. The chair and then the sofa, they broke right down and cried. The curtain started waving for me to come inside.
I tell you confidentially, the tears were hard to hide,
and we just couldn't say goodbye.
The clock was striking 12 o'clock. It smiled on me below. With folded hands, it seemed to say,
"We'll miss you if you go." So I went back and kissed him. When I looked around, the room was singing love songs and dancing up and down. And now we're both so happy, 'cause at last we found that we just couldn't say goodbye.
put in that little bit of you and I as a reminder that you and I live in a big country, but we pride ourselves more on the size of our hearts than on the number of miles between the Atlantic and the Pacific. If you think the proof of the pudding on that is in the eating, all right then, let's talk about eating, or not eating, which is what I wanted to talk about anyway. The thing is, millions of people overseas today aren't eating. One way you and I can help them is by saving and sharing on wheat products and fats. And here's another simple, direct way. Mail off a check or money order tonight to Emergency Food Collection, New York City. That's Emergency Food Collection, New York City. You'll be paying for food in tin cans for famine relief overseas. Do it now. Judge the size of your check by the shape of your pocket and the size of your heart. Good night.
Join us again next week when we'll all be back. Meredith Willson and his Coffee Time Orchestra, the King Sisters, and yours truly, Ben Gage. Until next Thursday, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's number one brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
From June 13, 1946, an episode of Maxwell House Coffee Time, hosted by Meredith Willson, a summer replacement series for the Burns and Allen program. That wraps up this hour of Old Time Radio. I'm Jake Longwell. Thank you for your company. Join me again when you can for more classic sounds from radio's golden era. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.